Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
From the fight capital of the world, inside my suite here in Carlsbad, California, along with Goes in his studio in Las Vegas, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, and I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the Devious and Dastardly Goes. We'll be with you for the next hour or so. We're going to discuss UFC 272, which took place this past Saturday. Last night. This is a Sunday taping for your Monday delivery. We're going to discuss top to bottom UFC's 272. Of course, we'll concentrate on those big stories that dominated the show and all the latest news as well. There's a fighter that's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the possible matchups coming out of UFC 272. And, of course, you know, some fighters are going to have stock that's down, like they say on Wall Street, because of the losses that they incurred. Obviously, some controversial referee decisions, judges' decisions, all of it, boys. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Sunday night for your Monday delivery, and tonight's Sunday, March 6th. Do you miss those days, Goes? From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook.
I do. Yeah, I do miss it.
Yeah, me too. Maybe during March Madness, we can come kind of go by and see what the digs look like. I know they've changed it. They've remodeled it. We're still welcome there. It's just we're not as exclusive as we once were. But It doesn't mean we can't go back and do our thing now that COVID's chilling out a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm down for that.
COVID be tripping these last couple of years. Finally, COVID calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
All right. UFC 272 is in the books. It took place last night in the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Colby Covington defeated Jorge Masvidal in the main event. Wow. I would say the fight pretty much delivered. I wish it had more wow moments, you know, but I think both guys at least buzzed each other to the point of wobbly legs or getting, you know, getting the knockdown or just putting the other's, you know, consciousness in jeopardy. But those were very, very minimal moments, Goes. Even submission attempts, they were very minimal compared to the wrestling of Colby Covington, which dominated Jorge Masvidal. A lot of the time it was spent with Colby on top, basically straddling Masvidal in different types of positions, but mostly against the cage, with Masvidal kind of hip scooting, butt scooting, trying to get up, but Colby just not letting him. Not that traditional, like, hey, I've mounted you and you're completely flat, your body's completely flat. No, Jorge was kind of in a sitting position, but I swear I saw them in that same position for quite a lot of that fight.
Yeah, I think you can categorize fights sometimes as great, good, okay, and bad. And for me, this fight was just okay. And It was okay because I had a couple of those moments here and there. But for the most part, I think we all felt like we knew what was going to happen. And a lot of us were maybe not expecting a great fight, but some sort of conclusion to this, and we got it in a different way.
Well, there, I guess, sounds terrible to say because that's been Masvidal's thing. You know, there is kind of a new king of the 305. I mean, you got to give Covington his props. He won the fight. He's claimed South Florida is his home for the last 10 years. Of course, Masvidal's born and raised there. We had that at stake, you know, kind of like hood rights, I guess. Mm-hmm. Former ATT, you know, teammates. I think Jorge was basically waving the ATT flag. representing the gym that kicked out Covington. So, you know, Covington, obviously, he gets to brag that, hey, my new gym is better. And he took some shots at some of Jorge's current ATT teammates. He gets that 305 swag, I guess, with him. So a lot was at stake, but you're right, Goes. This isn't coming off a barn burner. There was no finish.
What I don't understand is this. I know Miami's big, but still, man, like, he doesn't have to just dodge Jorge Masvidal. Like, he's coming at the whole team. And I mean, who's to say you don't run into an Andre Arlovsky or something at a nightclub, and that dude's going to knock your block off. Like, I know Colby's doing his thing, man, but God, this just seems like a dangerous tightrope to walk. I mean, he got the victory. He got it over Jorge Masvidal. I think just leave it at that, but Jesus Christ, man, he's going after everyone.
And the wives. I mean, this wasn't isolated, you know? Like, it's weird because I guess with Masvidal, he actually complimented Jorge's ex-wife, but what he did was he put their business out in public, and then he never really attacked the kids, but he said he was a deadbeat dad towards the kids. But now with Poirier, as he starts to turn the page, these were his words, Miami street trash to Louisiana swamp trash or something. He's really, really taking it up a notch here by stating that McGregor's the real dad of his daughter and taking shots at the wife. And you know what's terrible is I think McGregor called her a hoe, and now Colby's having a run at her. Like, what did Poirier's wife do to deserve this?
Nothing, man. And here's the thing that bothers me the most is I get it, man. I get you're trying to sell fights. Colby's going to be Colby. But at what point does the UFC, can't anybody just, shouldn't Dana White just go, hey, man, shut the fuck up for a second. Like, I get it. Say what you want about the fighter. Say whatever the hell you want. But all right, you've had your run at a couple families here. Stop it already. Just stop. Like, I mean, come on. We got to have some kind of respect. That's where martial arts comes from, man. Respect. You got to have some.
And he agreed as much with Jorge and with the journalist that asked him, did it go too far? Yeah, it did. He didn't really like it, you know, but he says he's never really told the fighters to put a muzzle on it when it comes to anything. They can say what they want. That's just something they, I guess, take a little pride in. But yeah, Goes, I hear what you're saying. It's starting to get a bit much. I know that Dana was really shaken up when Conor McGregor and Khabib took their rivalry to another level on two occasions. One in Brooklyn, New York, when Conor threw that dolly through that little bus that was transporting the fighters, the subsequent glass breaking put a couple fights in jeopardy because some of that glass wound up in people's eyes and shaking people up, whatever. And then after the fight, when him and Khabib actually fought, you know, Khabib went into the audience and, you know, they had a little bit of a tussle there, but there's people that just paid money there that aren't fighters that probably were in the middle of that. And I don't remember anyone getting seriously hurt, but someone one day will get seriously hurt because of this type of stuff. That's just, like I say, going too far. And look, man, fight fans are smart enough to know that I'm in for the fight. I get that these two guys don't like each other. You got my $74.99. They're not waiting for you to take it to that level to spend the $74.99. They're in. They already believe it, you know, that there's a rivalry. So it's kind of almost unnecessary.
Totally unnecessary. I mean, at some point, you got to draw a line.
Yeah, I agree. So Masvidal faced the, well, let's talk about the fight, I guess, before we get to the post fight. During the fight, Covington basically, his main weapon was his wrestling, his pressure, just kind of like how we suspected. And Masvidal was very worried about it. He couldn't really get offensive striking going. A lot of it was counter striking. And he was so worried about the takedown that a couple times Colby was actually outstriking him because he was touching Masvidal. I think Masvidal always had a little bit of a comfortability that he wasn't going to get knocked out because Colby just doesn't seem to possess, you know, that extra oomph that can take you out. So that part I think he was comfortable with, but he was still taking some shots. Colby's striking was on, was on. And then the wrestling was really, really, you know, high level. And like I said, George just had no answer for it. Plus, he drained George's energy. George said as much. He said after that first round, he really, really felt flat. But in rounds 2 and 4, when George was able to stop either takedowns or get up from takedowns, and he actually got a little bit offensive, he kind of hurt Colby a few times. You know, it's just there wasn't enough of those sequences.
Yeah, it was kind of odd. Jorge Masvidal looked great going into the fight. He looked in shape. Round one, I really think he made a mistake in complaining about the eye gouge and not fighting Colby off. That put him in a bad situation. And even later on, I think there was a kind of a groin strike that where he did something similar. I know the sticking out the tongue. And there was even one sequence where he just kind of let Colby hit him. Something was off on Jorge Masvidal. I don't know what it was. I don't know if the motions got too much to him or what. But the way the fight played out, it really made me feel like I'm done. Okay, I get it. I've seen enough. I don't need to see this fight ever again unless Jorge Masvidal went on some kind of crazy run or something. But there's really nothing that makes me want to watch this fight ever again.
And he said so as much. He says, I wish I could turn back the clock, go to college, work on my wrestling. These wrestlers, I've had no answers for them. They really, really, you know, have success against me. But, you know, at age 37, obviously that just really can't be done. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that the top two guys in his division are wrestlers. He's now 0-1 against Covington, 0-2 against Usman. There's some strikers in there. You know, Stephen Thompson's a striker. He's already lost to him, but I guess he can fight again. Leon Edwards is a striker, but Leon Edwards is fighting Kamaru Usman. You have Bilal Muhammad. You know, Gilbert Burns can strike, but I feel like that guy's just a whiz on the ground and with the striking. But he's got Khamzat Chimaev, who we've seen can strike, but I think we think of him more as a wrestler. So I don't know. I don't even know if 155 is an option again, because it seems like 170 at his age is just a tough cut. Those extra 15 pounds, man, this guy would be – I just don't think he would be interested in doing that, especially with the type of money that he makes. Mm-hmm. But it is an option if, let's just say, he lays at night awake, can't sleep because he still dreams of being a UFC champion. Well, it ain't going to happen at 170 anytime soon. So perhaps he needs to get with a nutritionist and go, can my body do this? You know, but I really don't know what's next for him other than looking at him as a money fighter and just saying, hey, you know, you, Poirier, Diaz, McGregor, Cowboy Cerrone, maybe even Matt Brown, just a few of you guys. It's like we don't care too much about whether you're at 55 or 70 or 65 or anything. We just want you all to scrap, you know, because you guys put on entertaining fights. We'll pay you some extra coin and just go out there and do your thing. We'll make up belts or whatever. That he could do. He's done it with BMF. But title contention, man, it's over unless he drops to 55.
You know, and I don't even really want to see him at 155. I just think that time has come and gone. The lifestyle that he likes, I just don't see it. I don't see him being effective. So it's 170, and it's weird because Masvidal's, he's an interesting character. So there are matchups that you'll tune into. But you're right, as far as title aspirations or anything like that, that's got to go away. He's got to get nasty. And whatever the next fight is, he's got to get nasty, because what he lost a little bit was a little bit of that street cred. You know, you can't lose three straight like this in the fashion that he has and run around and be a BMF. So he has to gain a little bit of that back. And I don't know. You know, the first guy that you'd want to point at is another foe with unfinished business in Leon Edwards, but he's got a title shot. So there's not much you can do there. I have always wanted to see Conor McGregor and Jorge Masvidal. I just don't know if they put that together, but that would be a sort of a dream matchup. One that would reinvigorate my fire to watch Jorge Masvidal.
Aren't you of the belief that the UFC is going to make Diaz versus McGregor happen?
You have to believe that that's what's going to happen, but everything both guys says leads you to believe it's not. It's the strangest thing, but that fight has to happen. It really does.
And they do. Like, you know what? Huh? Go ahead.
I was going to tell you, the more and more time that goes by, the less and less I give a shit.
Well, if you are of the believer that that is inevitably going to happen, then that's going to leave money fighters like him and Dustin Poirier off to the side. Because again, Poirier is kind of in the same pickle. He just had his title shot. He does have a win over Justin Gaethje. I suppose he could hope he wins that. But if Justin Gaethje doesn't win, there's others that they're going to give a title shot before Poirier again. Poirier's already beaten McGregor twice, fought him three times. What's he going to do? They pay him a lot of money, and he's an entertaining fighter. He's one of a select group of fighters that doesn't have to fight for a title for him to be at the top of the bill. So, like I say, but him and Masvidal are tight. I just don't see them, you know, mixing it up. Maybe it was kind of wise for Covington to call out Poirier, since he seems to be out of the title picture at 170 for the moment, at least until we figure out Burns and Chimaev, Edwards and Usman. You know, that could take a whole year. Who knows? But, you know, Covington, he just may want to, you know, fight it out. And honestly, Poirier is a guy that seems to struggle with wrestlers as well. So that might be an enticing matchup for Covington that he already knows about if they've gotten rounds in before.
I just don't see that fight ever happening. I don't see Colby going lower. And yeah, I mean, everything Dustin says is hard to process because you can never tell what side of him is talking, what's important, belts, money, pride. I never really know with Dustin Poirier. But I don't know. I don't know about what your thoughts are, but for me, that fight really does nothing for me.
He can avenge ATT since Masvidal, you know, came up a little short. His wife's honor, because Covington's obviously, you know, coming at her. Just to get the chance to shut somebody up who's kind of a bully in those weight classes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and like I say, if Diaz and McGregor are tied up, what is he going to do? I mean, like I say, he's already 2-1 against McGregor. He really doesn't need to go there. Really, he'd only have to fight Diaz. But then now let's pivot. Let's go to Diaz. Diaz is saying, I want one fight and then I want to retire. But see, all these guys, throw Poirier and Diaz in there. They're bullshitters, man. Like, whatever they say, it just seems like the opposite happened. So what I can tell is obviously they're just negotiating in the public's eye. Dana White feels confident that they're going to re-sign him, that they're going to re-sign him before his last fight. I've gotten the little hints that they want to probably do McGregor versus Diaz. And then once they sign him, you know, which means they'll meet Diaz's price, then Diaz probably can, I suppose, fight Poirier. But if Diaz is going to fight McGregor, and see, I'm tying all kinds of things. I'm tying a lot of loose ends here. Joanna Jędrzejczyk said she's hearing something about a stadium show at Allegiant. Well, if what jumps out at you? Ngannou, right, versus Jones? But if that ain't happening, what's next?
Diaz versus Nate.
Exactly. So, again, what does that do for Poirier? You know, I don't know. You know, maybe he might want to take the Covington fight. But I just remember, this is one thing I vividly remember, when Poirier fought Khabib Nurmagomedov, I remember thinking, okay, Poirier used to have a problem with his hips. He got a surgery. He feels good. If he can stop the takedowns, you know, when you're just trying to convince yourself that if this can happen, if that can happen, this might happen, that might happen. I was processing that, right? And then I go back and look, and, you know, Khabib is just tough to stop, period. And then he gets Poirier down so easily in his first fight. You don't think Covington's going to do the same thing? You know what I mean? And then
exactly.
Yeah, so right away you're like, I really don't want to see a welterweight versus a lightweight. especially one that's really strong where you're not. I'd rather just see Poirier throwing hands against Diaz or someone else, but it just seems like that he's going to run out of options soon because I think McGregor and Diaz will get done.
Colby, honestly, for me, the fight that I find interesting would be Chimaev. I think that would be a fun fight.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's one where you sit down and you look at their skill sets and you go, okay, who's going to break in this one? I think that would be interesting. Then the other night, or last night, I was thinking too, you never really hear him talk about Conor. I mean, I think the UFC would be Colby. I think the UFC would be insane to ever set him up with him. But I just find it weird that knowing that, why you wouldn't maybe take shots at that guy. He never really says much about him.
It's a good question. I don't know. I'm trying to think as quick as I can so I don't leave you hanging. But if I'm a fighter, especially if I'm a champion, I want to be on a card that has Conor McGregor. I know Tyron Woodley, I think, was on two of them, and he got paid handsomely because he got pay-per-view buys off of cards that featured Conor McGregor. So I'm thinking you don't want to cause waves. You want to be on his cards. That may be one reason to just leave him alone, especially if you're in one division and he's in the other. But Colby seems to just not give two shits about anything. And so, yeah, you're right. Why hasn't he been on his radar? I don't know. I can't answer that question. Hmm. Only thing I can think of is maybe he doesn't want to go head-to-head with the Smack Talk?
I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, I think he'd do pretty well there.
Maybe. I mean, he's winning. When you're winning, you can kind of say anything. You can stutter. You can lose your train of thought. Because at the end of the day, you can go, man, I fucking won six straight. What have you done?
Right.
So, yeah. It's tough to say, man. It really is. Let's get back to this main event. What do you really feel Covington will do next? Do you really think there's something happening here with Poirier? Or should he just isolate himself at the guys at 170?
Here's the thing. When the
that UFC get them closer to a title, you know?
When the UFC doesn't shut something down right away, it always makes me think. And to me, I just felt like there's nothing with Poirier. There's absolutely nothing. But when it doesn't get shot down by the UFC, it makes me wonder if it is something that could happen. So we got to wait and see Dustin Poirier come back from vacation, see how he fields that question. But I wouldn't be shocked if they tried to make that type of fight. But yeah, Colby's in a rough situation, man. I mean, I don't know if I'm a UFC matchmaker who I would even want to throw his way, you know, because you don't want to derail other guys on their way up as well. It's a tough one.
What about Masvidal?
Masvidal, you got to give him the loser of one of these top fights, I think. You know, it depends because you have to put yourself in the UFC's shoes. What do you want out of Masvidal? You're paying him a lot of money. Would you prefer him to get back on the winning track? Do you want to use him to put somebody else over? I don't know. But, you know, names like Wonderboy pop out. Muhammad. I don't know that those are the type of fights that you want to pay a guy that much money to do. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking here, what about, I know this is such a reach, but I would honestly call Nick Diaz. If I make McGregor versus Nate, I would call Nick and go, how about we pay you $1 million and you fight Jorge Masvidal and we'll get him to put BMF up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you're here to avenge your little brother. And we'll focus on that. You're the OG of the West Coast gangsters, blah, blah, blah. And then for Masvidal, it's a chance to fight someone who has no threat of a takedown. They're just going to throw some hands. So it's winnable in that regard. And it'll sell a lot. You know, it'll pay him handsomely. It'll be a great fight. And I think it just keeps them both busy while the Luques of the world, the Burns, the Hamzats, they start to figure out what's happening up there, the Poiriers, the Nate Diaz's, and Conor McGregor's, they start to figure out what's happening over here. it just buys them some time. I don't see Jorge only fought once in 2019 after, let me see, 2019 was when he went 3-0, right? He did. He fought Till, Askren, and Diaz. In 2020, he fought once. In 2021, he fought once. And in 2022, he's fought once so far. I don't want him to just fight one time a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, you know, he didn't really get throttled too bad. I'm talking about his brain in this fight. I think he could conceivably come back and fight. It seems like, man, the early part, either this guy aged or his reactions were a little bit slow, but he was just getting touched in parts of his face that I normally see him slipping a little.
So he said it comes down to what his team says, that he could turn it around real quick or take some time and really work on some things. But yeah, I don't hate the idea. It's just I can't get that picture of Nick Diaz and his last fight out of my head and how he looked. And what he really looked like was a guy that just didn't want to be there.
Well, he also looked like a guy that hadn't fought in 6 years, too.
True.
You know what I mean? He really hadn't fought in 6 years. So to expect anything, you know, that looked good, you weren't going to get it. But he got paid some money. And if there's another one in there, then I think that's just a good way to protect both guys from getting thumped. Like, you don't want to throw Nick Diaz against Hamzat Chimaev, for example. You just don't. You know, you just want to put him in there against someone else. I think it'll get Nick's juices flowing because he knows they're just going to throw some hands and they're both about the same size. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, but I still think both guys probably want to fight. I know Nick said, you know, he didn't feel too comfortable or whatever, but I think in the end he still kind of enjoyed it, and I'd hate to see him just sit another 3 years before he comes back, or 6 years. I think I'd rather see him sooner rather than later, and so you got to give him names that entice him. Cerrone, Matt Brown, you know, I would almost throw Tim Means in there because he's got that style. It's just he's not as big of a name. So you got to have these popular names that are willing to go out there and have that slobber knocker type fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was the main event. And kudos to Masvidal for facing the media, answering all the questions. I think yet again, he called Kobe a bitch. But I like that he said, but that bitch can wrestle. So, you know, like that, being humble and being honest, that's appreciated by many. And, you know, he says he's going to work on that wrestling. But, man, I've been around these guys for a long time. He may not. I don't know. But what's the point? Like I say, I don't think he's going to be facing a wrestler anytime soon. Just face somebody. He's earned it. He's earned being able to fight other guys that have his style, that make a lot of money for the UFC, makes a lot of money for him, and that's it. You know, enough's enough. If he happens to be in a situation like Michael Bisping, where he's filming a movie or he's doing something else and something falls out and they go, hey, bro, can you save us? Then sure. You know, but other than something like that happening, I just think that the title runs are over for him.
Well, you know, when you think about it, like, Kamaru Usman has just been so dominant. Who's to say he just doesn't run through Leon Edwards? And then you get Leon Edwards in a situation where he can't really do much at the top, right? Maybe that's when you figure out the three-piece in a soda finally after a while. And I don't know, put them on tough or do something. And before you know it, people want to watch Masvidal again, right?
Well, yeah, if Edwards wins, for one, you got to dodge a few bullets. One, does Usman want the immediate rematch? Because he's earned it after having five title defenses. But if he doesn't, then can you sell Masvidal off a 3-fight losing streak? So you're hoping Masvidal grabs a win before he's even in that position. You know, you got, like I said, you got a couple obstacles in front of you. If it's for a title. Now, if Edwards loses to Usman.
I'm talking about if Leon Edwards loses.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Kamaru Usman is so dominant.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if he loses, he's in that same boat.
I agree. You got to make that fight at that point. Look, I'm going to point back to Michael Bisping again. He goes, when Michael Bisping beat Luke Rockhold to win the title, he really was filming a movie in Toronto, I believe. He had just beaten Anderson Silva. And if you think about it, that fight with Anderson Silva was very, very controversial. Some even had Anderson winning, but that's not my point. I didn't mind them saying that Bisping won. But that fight, like I say, I think Anderson just, you know, he it was a win.
He dicked around a little bit in the fight.
Yes. Yes. It was a winnable fight. And he didn't close it like he should have. So now Bisping, who went into that fight and, you know, from all accounts, I think a lot of us thought he was going to lose. Instead, he got his hand raised. And because of that, he was then in that position where when they called on him, at least he had the 3-fight win streak going and he had dodged that major bullet in Anderson Silva. Again, that's something I think George Masvidal can do if he fights other people that have nothing to do with the title, you know, and you got to aim for guys that have a name like you do that the UFC can pop on a fight night or something like that, or on a pay-per-view as a co-main event, and it sells. And if it does, they'll do business with them.
Hey, so really quick before we transition away from that main event, in a sense, it delivered, where I can't remember a night where more people tweeted, and the celebrities that were in the house for that were pretty big ones. Pretty big ones. You know, when Drake's putting all that money, which, by the way, I don't know, buying dinner really makes you guys even. That's a start. I think
if I don't think Drake, I would have tweeted that.
That's a start, bro, but we're not anywhere close
to it. Was that just it, or was there a conversation that led to that, or was that just out of the cold?
I think Jorge just randomly tweeted that. But yeah, that's a lot of money, man.
If the other guy said something nice to lift your spirits, and he said, "Hey, man, when I'm in Miami, I'll be there," then I think you can go, cool, dinner's on me. But if just out of nowhere you throw that, yeah, you're right. People are going to go, that ain't even eating things up. You know, like, you owe more than that.
You think he's worried about fucking dinner? He's betting, what, $250,000 on you?
Yeah, man. Poor George. I like George so much. I like Colby, too, honestly. But I think Colby's just, like I say, lost it a little. And I like George's point. He goes, I don't want the next generation of 10-year-olds thinking that, yeah, you need to, you know, lower yourself to these levels of self fights. You don't. And he's right. And that's exactly what I would tell Colby, man. I'd go, bro, do you realize how much of a badass you are? Like, just shut up. You don't even need to say these things. Like, just say, I'm going to kick your ass, and you know it, and you can't stop it. There you go. You can still be kind of cocky, but, you know, you don't have to make up these stories, and, you know, you look like that guy, and we need a paternity to, I mean, this isn't Jerry Springer.
Yeah, it's gone a little bit too far.
Yeah. All right. Co-main event had RDA, Rafael dos Anjos, former UFC lightweight champion. He fought Renato Moicano. Two things here. A, congratulations to Rafael dos Anjos. Thank you to Renato Moicano for stepping up on less than a week's notice to, you know, save the co-main event. Rafael dos Anjos probably appreciates it. He hadn't fought in over a year. I think he was in the 16th month mark. He was supposed to fight Rafael Fiziev actually a few weeks ago, but there was some delays, and so Rafael Fiziev was supposed to fight. You know, he got moved to this card, and then COVID, I think, knocked him out the second time. So the UFC scrambles, gets Renato Moicano, who had a good showing for himself for about a round and a half. And then after that, end of round two, RDA was putting it on Moicano. Moicano goes in between rounds two and three. Dustin Safov comes out for round three. Again, he's throwing some hands. He's throwing some strike. Boom, RDA hits that takedown. RDA whoops him pretty good. Between rounds three and four, that guy's stumbling, man. His eyes closing. He's wobbly. Should he come out for round four? Okay, there he goes. They're taking a look at him. He does. Same thing, you know. He's got about a minute juice. Boom, boom, boom. Here comes the takedown. Fuck, another 4 minutes of torture, you know, where the guy was just getting lit up. Now, that said, before round five, it looked like the doctor and the ref both agreed it should stop. I think they were praying that his own corner would do it, but they realized that wasn't going to happen. But yet, neither guy stood up and took control of the matters. Because remember, the doctor can do it, but even if the doctor goes, nah, I want him to fight, the ref can still look at it and go, nope, I think he shouldn't fight, and then that'll be it. Neither one did it. They go out there, kind of almost the same at times, but then there was some times where Moicano, just out of nowhere, you know, like a zombie who won't go away, actually started landing some strikes and even hurting RDA. He just kind of ran out of time. I'm not saying he would have finished him, but he was hurting RDA. And so because of that, I'm wondering if the doctor and the ref are going to see that as vindication for what I thought was poor decision making. You know, because in the end, Moicano almost rallied, but at the same time, anybody that's watched MMA just knew that's it, man. Even that rally, despite the rally, goes, Moicano's probably got a pretty bad headache, and he's got a long road to recover. You know, I'm sure his soul is hurting, his brain is hurting, his body's hurting, and that's, I think, what we were mostly concerned about is, well, how's he going to look before his next fight? Because this one took a lot out of him.
Just because you can do something doesn't make it right. You know, there are a lot of fighters that will just keep going. And if you don't stop them, they'll just keep going and keep going and keep going. You do have to save them from themselves, I think, at times. And this was one of those scenarios where, okay, yeah, maybe he could land a shot and put RDA out. It's possible, but it's not worth the risk of what was going on in that cage. Like, and to top it all off, like, this is a dude that did the company a favor, you know, and I don't know, he's a good fighter, you want to see him stick around, but after a fight like that, I don't want to see that fool for a long time. I want him to go spend that money. Hopefully they paid him really well, whatever they went into that negotiation, whatever they went into that fight and they said, this is what we're going to give you for saving this, you better double or triple that, especially after what he went through, because I don't think that guy's going to be the same. And I just don't think that's a fair reward. You know, I think if you're in his corner, I think the doctor, I think the referee, somebody should have stepped in and just said, enough is enough. We can't do this. He was fighting with one eye out there.
Yeah, well, I listened to the press conference and Dana White gave him his due, gave him respect. And I remember him saying, we're going to triple check him. I don't know what that means, but he kind of said, well, you know, we're going to pay him. We're going to reward him handsomely. So I don't know if that means show, win, and then another bonus or what. He did say he was the only fighter of the whole card that was transported to the hospital, but that he was doing good.
I was really confused by him saying that, because I think the thing that he said right before it was he was the only one that was transported to the hospital. And he said, we're going to triple check him. And I didn't know if that means like, get another doctor in here and check him out again, and another, or if he meant I'm gonna give him triple the check.
Yeah, really, no, he kind of was mumbling along, but then he kind of said, yeah, you know, like financially, that they'll do that. And okay, that's cool. See, I didn't know if that meant that, or if they were gonna give him a bonus and then yet another bonus, or what it meant. But here's kind of what I'm getting at. Let's say Renato Moicano beats RDA. What happens now? Because Renato Moicano still isn't fighting for another 4 to 6 months because of just that, you know, the damage he took. Mm-hmm. But when he does, what are you doing with him? What really did he have to gain? You're still only kind of throwing him against someone in the 8 to 12 range, maybe the 6 to 10 range. It's not like he was going to become a number one contender. That's clearly Islam Makhachev. Only RDA could jack up Renato Moicano, grab the mic and say something so crazy that he might leapfrog over Dariush and Makhachev. But for all intents and purposes, it's Makhachev and Dariush. The winner will probably get the winner of Gaethje and Oliveira. RDA, by getting a win, that's two since he's been back to 55 and he's a former champ. Okay, he's cool. He's in the, you know, he's kind of in the running. And then you got those veterans, man, those aging veterans like Poirier and Chandler and Ferguson, who are just big names. And so they're going to get tossed into fights and they might be spoilers who become contenders again. I don't know, but nothing was going to happen other than he might just take home his win bonus. But I think he had already established that by saving the card, he's already getting paid well and he might get some sort of a bonus. I just didn't see that there was an upside by praying for the 3% chance that he might throw a windmill right, catch RDA, knock him out, and then get his hand raised, you know, other than to say, you know, hey, oh, UFC delivers yet again. Look, you know, look at this Hail Mary that landed. But really, in the end, God, they chew these fighters up and spit them out. some work for them, some don't, and then they just become part of the history books. You know, Jeremy Stevens, he's been in a lot of slobber knockers. You know, he's kind of tripping right now. He's going, God damn, like they wouldn't re-sign me. I mean, he's got a minus 500 record. I get that part, but his fights were usually pretty entertaining, you know, and I think he had like 30 of them, but just one day you're just gone. You're just not part of the organization. The organization moves on and that's it. So, you know, like I say, this was perfect. He showed up for about a round and a half. We had a fight. Okay, you know, let's give him a little bit of a lifeline. Comes out of round two, or finishes round two, comes into round three, throws a little bit, starts the gas, gets the takedown and a couple elbows and get him out of there, man.
Mm-hmm. It just went way, way too far for me.
If if they followed that, they would have saved about 12 and a half minutes worth of damage and exhaustion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got to be feeling like crap. And yeah, he's going to get paid, but, you know, money comes and goes. Your health, that's something that you can't mess around with.
No doubt. But RDA, hey, hats off to you. You are in that range of, I think he said, I'd love to fight, you know, revisit the McGregor matchup, but I still think everything points to McGregor versus Diaz. So I suppose he could fight Poirier, Ferguson again, Chandler. I don't know. I think Chandler and Ferguson, you might as well take them off the board as well. I think they're going to face each other.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? I don't know. He says he's moving back to Brazil. Cool. Congrats to RDA. He's also 37. He better start moving. You know, this is a young man's sport. Not too many guys.
He doesn't look 37, though. He doesn't fight 37, right? But you're right. That's all going to flip like that.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah. But you got to give him credit for his age. He goes out there and he handles business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. All right, so let me give out some other information here on the card, and then we'll circle back to what's popping here. I thought we'd have time to get to a lot of it, if not all of it, but I don't want to run out of time. So Bryce Mitchell defeated Edson Barboza via unanimous decision. Yep, three decisions ended the card, and that's why I think it was flat. It had this feeling of being flat towards the end. Kevin Holland defeated Alex Oliveira. It wasn't going his way up until it started to go his way. Alex Oliveira actually won round one and looked good for the early portion of round two, and then Kevin Holland put it on him. Sergey Spivak defeated Greg Hardy. Easy work there in round one. On the featured prelims, Jalen Turner defeated Jamie Mullarkey. This one went two rounds, early part of round two. Jalen Turner won, but Mullarkey was tough. He hung in there. Marina Rodriguez defeated Jan Jonan via split decision. You know, I thought Jan Jonan, for being a 3-1 underdog, had a good showing of herself. I thought she won round one, and she may nick one of the other two rounds and get out of there with the win, but only one judge thought that. Nikolai Negumaranu defeated Kennedy and Chukwu via split decision. Marina Moros defeated Maria Agapova. Marina Moros touched the whole crowd, not only because she got a one of the few finishes. There was only five finishes of the 13 fights, but her representing Ukraine was a very moving moment for the crowd. Not just in attendance, but everyone that was at home tweeting about it. You could tell she was very, very emotional. Her family's fighting for their freedom, just as she was fighting Maria Agapova. So huge, huge win for Marina. Moros Umar Nurmagomedov defeated Brian Kelleher, submitted him in the first round. Tim Elliott upset Tagir Ulanbekov. Unanimous decision there. I disagreed with it. I thought Ulanbekov did enough to win, but I wouldn't call it a robbery. Ludovit Klein defeated Devontae Smith. Split decision win there. And Dustin Jacoby defeated Michael Olenechek. That was the first fight of the night. Unanimous decision there. The gate was $6.7 million. I think it was in the top 10 for the UFC. They've been doing very well at T-Mobile. And 19,470 souls goes, or something like that, was in attendance. So that's almost 20 G's in that stadium, you know, as far as people go. Bonuses went to Covington and Masvidal, 50K each. Holland and Moros got 50K each as performances of the night. So you want to go with Mitchell and Barbosa next? You want to discuss that? What were your thoughts?
I think Bryce Mitchell really proved a point that night. Edson Barbosa is such a tough fighter, and he manhandled that guy, you know, and he set it up with some striking too, which is interesting.
Locked him down.
Yeah. Kevin Holland, I thought, I think he's still going to go home a little upset. Like, I know things worked out for him, but the fight really wasn't going his way. You know, it really just came down to a shot that turned into a domino effect. And then Spivak, that was a great performance for him. Greg Hardy, who knows what that guy's going to do next, but
he definitely... He's out of contract, too.
Yeah, but it's weird because that part of the card, to me, had like a lot of momentum, you know, the early part of the card. And you're right, I'll agree with you. I feel like it did kind of fall a little flat. It didn't feel like you didn't get your money's worth, but the whole of the card was fairly good.
Yeah. The early prelims, the first three went to a decision. So of those four, three of them were a decision. Nurmagomedov gets the sub. Then we go to the featured prelims, which are usually on ESPN. This time they were on ESPN News. And they had two subs and two decisions. And then the main card had two finishes and two decisions. And then the main card had two finishes and then three decisions. But two of those three decisions were five-round fights. That just sucks the life out of an event. I don't care what anyone says. Don't tell me about there's the beauty in wrestling and dominating someone. Yeah. I mean, yes, there are some people up there going, wow, how about the beauty of this wrestling and the dominance and the positioning? Yes, I'm not saying there isn't. Some people are fans of that. Some people are fans of the color lavender, we'll say, right? Mm-hmm. But usually your Ralph Lauren's of the world or whatever, they're, you know, they're going to start off with black and blue and red and what usually sells, and then they'll go to some of the other colors because they know most people don't like, you know, certain colors or whatever. They do their studies, and same here. Most people want a finish. Most people prefer the knockout to the submission. And when it ain't happening, you're going to get some boos. Oh, I'm tired of trying to say these people aren't educated or anything. No, there's something to the entertainment of a KO. Otherwise, you know, why do you think boxing's so popular? You know, I mean, wrestling's been around forever. And wrestling's cool, but it ain't as exciting as boxing. You know, for some it is, but for most it ain't. So that just didn't happen. There was a lot of boos raining in, and I kind of understood the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I get it, especially when there's so much on the line there with those two fighters. But, I mean, I was just okay with it. It wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it wasn't too great either.
Turner and Malarkey was fun. I just got to say that. Yeah, Rodriguez and Panda was really nice, too. I thought they might get fight of the night. What's that?
They got the bonuses wrong, I believe.
Who would you have given them to?
I actually like that Malarkey-Turner fight as being fight of the night. They both gave it hell for the time that they did. I just didn't really understand why. I would do it to that. And then as far as performances individually, I think RDA deserved one. I thought that was a really good performance from him. And the last one, maybe Spivak.
Yeah, well, I can't argue with Spivak. Hardy kind of made it easy for him, but I can't argue with Spivak. And I would have gone with Panda and Rodriguez maybe as fight of the night. Although, you know, Covington and Masvidal did go a full 25. I get it. Turner, I could give him a performance of the night, but I think Moroz was just the soft spot. A, she did get the finish, and B, Ukraine, baby. You know, that there's just, I mean, the whole world is rallying around Ukraine. That one was going to be tough to beat. I don't know if you caught Man City versus Man United, but man, I was so moved by the beginning. All of the athletes getting together and standing in a circle, you know, every other player from every team showing unity, all the blue and light blue and yellow, you know, to represent the Ukrainian colors from the flag that were in the stands and signs and things like that. I thought that was outstanding. And then, of course, as that was done, the teams got back to their sides and then they take the knee, you know, and you can hear the people on USA Network, Telemundo, NBC Sports, wherever you're listening, they're very clear in saying the players are now taking a knee as we, you know, salute them for saying no to all forms of racism. And I thought it was just so powerful, you know, that they're doing that. And then the round of applause that Marina Moroz got from, you know, her post-fight interview, awesome. Congrats to the T-Mobile crowd for getting behind her. So yeah, I knew her 50 G's. If she got the finish, I knew that 50 G's was kind of going to be tough to deny her. But hopefully some other checks were written too.
Yeah.
Joanna and Jacek was in the back. She did an interview. She feels like, hey, I'm one of the big three because Jessica Andrade is gone. So she's thinking either give me Rose or Zhang Weili. Okay, I get it. And Rose appears to be fighting Carla Esparza. And she kind of welcomed Carla Esparza to that little group because she's a former champ and she's earned her way there with a 5-fight win streak. But somebody asked her, well, what about Rodriguez or Dern or just one of the up-and-comers? And she should have seen the look she gave. Like, do you know who I am? I'm a former champ. I'm not trying to fight. Not necessarily scrubs, but I'm thinking, man, Joanna, like, Zhang Weili, apparently the reason she isn't fighting is because of visa issues and things happening in the world. Like, you really have to let that go because if Zhang Weili says, well, what the hell, I'm not going to fight for the end of the year, Joanna just turned 2 years of not fighting. She hasn't fought in 2 years. You cannot get those 2 years back on the clock. And I know a lot of fighters say, I feel refreshed and I feel so good and I cleared my mind. Okay, but you're older, you know? So I wish she would have maybe had another name for her to fight if Zhang Weili isn't ready to go. But she says, yeah, it should be her versus Zhang Weili at some point, but there didn't seem to be like a light at the end of the tunnel, like a date or a venue or nothing like that. And remember, she only wants to fight in front of fans.
Yeah, that's a little bit much, and I don't think she's going to get that wish. I think she is going to end up having to fight somebody a little less than what she wants. But I mean, she wants the perfect scenario. She wants fans. She wants big money. She wants to pick the opponent. I don't know, man. The sport starts to pass you by when you start making those demands.
I hear you. I wish the fighters made the better money when they were younger and they're fighting a little bit more frequently, but them getting more money as they're aging, I'm not saying they're getting lazier. That's a terrible word to use because it's not really accurate. It's just they lack the motivation, you know, because now they're making one fight that what they used to make in 10 fights. So I get that part, but still, you know, if you have any form of hunger, rally those years. Don't give away those years when you're at your best, when your physical is dropping a little, but boy, do you have a ton of experience and you're sharp in the mind and you're as dangerous of a fighter as there is. You know, the Diaz brothers, again, took a lot. They fought for so cheap at times, and now they wanted to, you know, they wanted to get paid. And I get it. It kind of worked for Nate at times, but I still felt like there could have been a few more key fights in there somewhere.
How about Andrei Arlovsky at his age, still racking up wins, making big paychecks each time?
Yeah. Yeah, I like what he's done. He's in his 40s, and he's still chugging along. As far as the card goes, I guess I'm ready to exit and, you know, just kind of put 272 in the books. Holland's going to stay at welterweight, he says, but he's not scared to mix it up with the 85ers. By the way, he said he rehydrated from 170 to 190, and they asked him, well, what about when you fight at 185? He says, I'd go from 185 to about 188, 192, so almost the same Kevin Holland, except the opponent is a guy that's one that weighed in at 170, not 185 and possibly ballooned up to 210. So that was one of the big differences. Again, Greg Hardy just fought the last fight on his contract. Who knows if he'll get another one? I think Marina Rodriguez is in a nice spot at the women's strawweight division. Kudos to her. Tim Elliott may have saved his job with that win over Tagir Ulembekov, who's a nice up-and-cover that's highly thought of. Big win for him, and you could see him and James Krause extremely happy. They said he worked hard, so that was cool. Dustin Jacoby said he had a really, really rough camp. His legs, his feet, he just had a lot of injuries going in, and that's why he wasn't kicking as much. But he wound up getting the win there, so he survived that one. Good this fight. Week, what's that?
That was a good fight, too.
This week, we have a UFC fight night with Thiago Santos and Magomed Ankalaev at the top of the bill. So this is what I call a solid main event. But now look at the difference between this card and the one before UFC 272. The fight card before UFC 272 was Makachev versus Green. Now I'm going to leave those guys alone because it was supposed to be Makachev versus Dariush. Green just stepped in and saved the card. But after that, it was Serkinov versus Terman, Cachoeira versus Kim, Sarukian versus Joel Alvarez. Actually, that's not so bad. Armin Petrosian versus Gregory Rodriguez. You know, there's just not too many names there where we're like, oh, shit. Oh, no, he didn't. He did not put that fight together. You're not saying that. But look at this one goes. You got Santos and Ankalaev, which is about the equivalent of Dariush and Makachev. And then you got Marlon Moraes versus Song Yadong. Sadiq Youssef versus Alex Caceres. Khalil Roundtree versus Carl Roberson. Drew Dober versus Terrence McKinney. Alex Pajeda versus Bruno Silva. I mean, that's an interesting fight there, man. Those guys are exciting. You see how not all cards are built equally? That's a solid main card.
Yeah, but the prices don't change much. You're buying a what ticket. You mean? When you're buying a ticket, you know, wherever you're sitting, that stuff doesn't really change that much, man. It's weird. It really, really, really is. Each card is just its own beast.
Yeah. This one will take place at the Apex. And it's a regular fight night. And then I also want to tell people thank you for tuning in to our watch along on Saturday night. We had a pre-fight show with Fadha Hanun. The watch along with Goz and I for about 5 hours, and then the post-fight show with Mike Bond. I popped in there for a little while. Goz was producing it. So congratulations to the team, especially Goz. That was a long day for him. And hopefully you all enjoyed it. Hopefully you all enjoyed the coverage of UFC 272 with kind of a one man down. John Morgan left us a week ago, and he's kind of our guy that covers the events in Vegas, was our guy. So I want to give a shout out to Ken Hathaway, who was kind of double duty in terms of, you know, asking some questions here and there, and then also doing his work as video editor. We didn't actually have a reporter on site, but we still had somebody from the team on site. But a lot of the work was done from behind the scenes. Obviously, that'll get rectified going forward. And we'll always have a presence there of a reporter, especially the big event. So, but I still want to give a shout out to the team for delivering like we always do.
Yeah, it was a good rallying by the troops and long days for everyone. But we all came together and made it happen.
Looks like the next card is going to have Volkanovski versus the Korean Zombie and Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling. They're going to mix it up. So two title fights. We're back to championships.
Mm-hmm.
That's UFC 273. That one's in Jacksonville, Florida. And it's on April 9th, the same birthday as our mama. Goes. I think we can already start telling people watch along. Are we good for a watch along for that one?
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like it. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will update you as soon as we know for sure. Sorry if we kind of sprung the last one on you because it was on, it was off. It was on, it was off. It really kind of swayed back and forth. So on fight week, you heard us talking about it on Monday, but not as much on Thursday. But then if you follow us on social media, I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goz is at the Goz. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. You heard us really, really kind of doing a late push to tell you all that our watch along was back on and that, you know, you should come and hang out with us. So hopefully you caught that. Again, I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes, and the radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. And then aside for that, just want to thank you all again. You know, we're closing in on our 15-year anniversary, and we're happy that a lot of you have been with us for the whole ride. And if you haven't, then hey, we appreciate any of the time that you've ever spent downloading our show and listening and contributing. And you can always holler at us, and if you have a question or whatever, and we'll address it. All right, we're going to get on out of here. Keep an eye on us on the Spinning Backclick franchise series, which you can catch over at youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. You see bits and pieces of it on our website with video highlights, but the full version, again, is on youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. And we'll see you all on our next show coming up on Thursday. We'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Go out there and be a champion.